Good morning. We'll call a meeting of the Agriculture Policy Conference Committee to order. Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
And kind of our walking orders today, or what we hope to get done, is get as much as we can here in this hour. We both have session back at 10 o'clock, so we will recess to the call of the House, probably guessing around 1 o'clock over at the state capitol someplace, and try to get our bill wrapped up yet today. So that's our game plan. And it will be posted on our committee website, the location and time, if we reconvene and come back this afternoon. It's going to be a busy day. So thank you all for coming. And we have a couple of good bills. Hope to make it to one very good bill when we finish our work here today with the Ag Policy Bill. I'm carrying the bill on the House side. I would like to welcome my colleagues in both the Senate and the House, and welcome Senate Ag Chair, Representative or Senator Doug Magnus. Doug, this may be your last conference committee. It's been a pleasure to work with you, and you've done a great job for Minnesota agriculture. Our thanks to you, and would you care to say a few words?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. It is like old times coming back here in the old House Agriculture Meeting Room right here in the State Office Building. Spent eight years here, and I was really pleased to see you brought out the A-team and Pages. Arlen's here, so that's good and good news, and bring back memories for us. And I really appreciate your comments, Mr. Chairman, and I appreciate you and your other and all the other members of the committee working with us as we put together this this effort, and looking forward to getting her done, and looking forward to the next stage of Doug Magnus's life, whatever that is. And the rest of you, I hope you have good luck with your endeavors and your elections, and be back again.
On behalf of all of us, Senator, thank you much for your work. Also, some opening comments from our House Ag Chairman, Representative Rod Hamilton.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for carrying the bill as well. I know in years past we used to have a Policy Ag Committee and a Finance Committee, and of course we joined those this go-around. So I just want to say thank you for agreeing to carry the policy bill, and I appreciate all the work that you've done as well. I know that I also want to say thank you for everybody meeting over here at the State Office Building. Myself and Representative Eakin, we serve on Ways and Means, and we may be pulled out of here for a few votes there, so we appreciate that. Once again, welcome over here. My great senator and friend, we house-trained him before we sent him over to the Senate, so that's a good thing. But no, I look forward to friendly discussion and debate. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Chairman. Well, let's get started. We have the two bills side by side. Copies are available. And we also have some of the major differences that we'll be working off after we have a walkthrough. So if our researcher, Colby, could walk through and give us some of the 10,000-foot view of the comparison of the House and Senate bills here on the ag policy. Colby?
Mr. Chair and members of the conference committee, as the chair pointed out, in your packets you have the side-by-side document that the reviser put together. It's the two bills side-by-side, so you can see similarities and differences. And there's also a one sheet of paper front and back in your packets. Mr. Knopp from the Senate and I put together a table that lists the major differences between the two bills for your reference. And the side-by-side is just under 70 pages long, so I will work through it kind of quickly for the sake of time. But if members have questions, please ask me. If you have questions about the Senate position, maybe Mr. Knopp could answer those. So starting on page R1, at the very top, the Senate is on the right-hand side. You see Senate-only language. The Senate declares Lester the state soil of Minnesota. The House does not have that language. And then below that, you see the beginning of dozens of provisions that were requested by the Department of Agriculture. They are policy and technical provisions. So I'll move pretty quickly over the language that's exactly the same. The rest of page R1 regarding the Department's sustainable agriculture reporting duties, that's the same. Page R2, the House and Senate language, is exactly the same. Page R3, you see a difference. The Senate has language regarding the state indemnifying local units of government that collect waste pesticide under a contract with the state. The House doesn't have that language. The House bill didn't have a hearing in civil law, So you'll notice as we go through the side-by-side that several provisions that have to do with either civil law or data practices were removed for that reason, because there wasn't time with the committee deadlines to have a hearing in civil law on those sections. The rest of R3, beginning on the bottom, agricultural pesticide sales invoices, that is the same. Moving on to page R4, Senate-only language requested by the department that modifies the tree company registry. That was also removed by the House for civil law and data practices issues. Not issues, I shouldn't say. There weren't issues necessarily, just due to the committee jurisdiction and the timing of the deadlines. On R5, the language is exactly the same. These are additional provisions requested by the Department of Agriculture that appear in both bills. On to R6, down through about three-quarters of the page, the language is exactly the same. And then you see on the Senate side, Senate Section 17 has to do with civil liability, civil law section that doesn't appear in the House bill. On R7, that language, the entire page, House and Senate are the same. And also same language on R8 and R9. R10 and R11 are also exactly the same, as is R12. And then we move to page R13, you'll see a difference, House Section 27, Senate Section 31. Both bodies, the intent is to exempt feed that's produced by a licensed feed distributor and used by that distributor, or farmers who are under a contract with that distributor. Both bodies are attempting to exempt that portion of the commercial feed from the department's tonnage fee. You can see the House and Senate have two different approaches to accomplish the same thing. I believe the Senate also has an item in their repealer that pertains to this. The bottom of R13 is a Senate-only provision requiring labeling and school notification of finely textured beef. That continues on the top of R14 on the Senate side. And after that, the rest of R14 is the same, House and Senate. R15 continues that section regarding the Department of Agriculture's organic agriculture reporting. That's the same. R16 is the same down through Section 30. And the next several pages of the side-by-side are House-only language establishing a new dairy research, teaching, and consumer education authority. See that language on the bottom of R16, R17, R18, R19, and the very top of R20. And then on R20, the rest of the language on the page is the same, House and Senate. We're back to more language requested by the Department of Agriculture and the Board of Animal Health. Page R21, the language is the same down through Section 40 of the House language and Section 39 of the Senate. And then on the Senate side, you see Senate-only language that the first section, Section 40, is some sort of technical changes that pertain to the Rural Finance Authority, which is a separate public body, but it's sort of under the jurisdiction of the Department of Agriculture. That's page R22 and R33, so you can see the Senate change on lines 21.27 through 21.29. And then if we move on to R24, you see the beginning of establishment of a new lending program for the Rural Finance Authority, called the Pilot Agricultural Microloan Program. That is Senate-only language that continues on R25 and the top of R26. I believe there's an item in the repealer, too, that together with the sections you see before you would move some money from the Agroforestry Revolving Loan Fund into the RFA's General Revolving Loan Fund and make that money available for the new microloan program. The rest of R26 is the same. Section 41 and section of the House and Section 45 of the Senate were not requested by the Department of Agriculture, but both bodies added those sections. It has to do with how banks are allowed to treat loans that are backed by the Rural Finance Authority for the purposes of their capital requirements. The rest of R26 is the same as is R27. We're getting into language that deals with licensing and bonding of grain buyers and stores requested by the department. On to R28, you see the language is the same halfway through the page. And then there's a Senate-only section that was requested by the department and removed by the House due to the committee jurisdiction that I mentioned before, the civil law. So that continues on to R29. The rest of R29 is the same, as is the House and Senate language on R30. R31, R32, R33, and the top of R34. There's a small difference on R34 on the bottom, scale tickets, section 53 of the House language and 58 of the Senate. It's a technical difference on 29.9 of the House language. The scale ticket, it's an electronic scale ticket, and the House side, excuse me, on the Senate side, it's an electronic grain ticket. Just a minor difference of note. Section 59, then, on the bottom of R34, and continuing on to R35 is Senate-only language. That's, again, it talks about whether grain receipts are admissible in a civil action, so that doesn't appear on the House side for that reason. The rest of R35, those sections are the same. Moving to R36, dealing with labeling of firewood sold in the state, those sections are the same, requested by the department. On to R37, the firewood labeling language continues on the top of R37, and then one of the differences that's noted on your sheet is the House and Senate treatment of the biodiesel mandate exceptions. That begins Section 59 on the House side on R37 and Section 65 on the Senate side. You can see both bodies add a new exception for Coast Guard vessels and others that are subject to inspection by the Coast Guard. So the operators of those vessels would not have to purchase B2 or diesel that's blended with biodiesel. But then you can see the differences. The Senate on lines 35.27 and 35.29 on the Senate side for Section 65, the Senate would continue an existing exemption for number one, diesel blending requirements during cold weather months. And then you can see on 35.30, the Senate would extend the exceptions for the listed industries, as well as this general exception for number one, diesel during winter months until 2 years, until 2014. On the House side, you see that the House deals only in this area with the industry-specific exceptions and extends those for 8 years rather than two. The House actually, just for drafting reasons, deals with the number one diesel exception in a different area, but just to point out for now, you can see the Senate would extend the number one blending requirement or exception for 2 years, and the House would extend it for three, and I'll note that when we get to that section on the side-by-side. Section 66 starts on the bottom of page R37 on the Senate side only. That language would require the Commissioner of Agriculture and the Biodiesel Task Force to present two reports to the legislature dealing with research needs and then recommendations regarding whether the legislature should continue the exceptions currently in law to the biodiesel mandate. Section 67, Senate only, and has to do with the ethanol mandate. Currently in the state, there's a 10% ethanol blend requirement. The language you see on page R38 has to do with, in the future, moving that up to a 20% or E20 blend requirement. That language is set to expire on December 31st of this year, and the Senate would push out that expiration date as well as the effective date by 1 year. The House doesn't have similar language in this bill. On R39, begin a series of sections that deal with the treatment of seized animals and whether, I think essentially these sections that don't appear in the House bill but are only in the Senate side, would prohibit animal shelters from turning over abandoned animals for scientific research or product testing. The House does not have that language in the bill. And that language continues on page R40. It also requires shelters to maintain records on animals under its control for a certain period of time. And then on page R40, there's another difference, section 71 on the Senate side. This would extend, right now in law, there's a 7-year limit on wind easements. Wind easements are perpetual, so if someone sells an easement to a wind developer, that's perpetual unless there's no construction within 7 years of signing of the easement, and in that case, the easement would expire. In 2008, the legislature removed that requirement but had a delayed effective date. So the Senate would extend that effective date once again to 2017. So what that does essentially then is keep the 7-year limit on easements with no construction work. It would extend that limit an extra 5 years. And then on R40 on the House side, section 60, you see the section I referenced earlier regarding the House extending the number one diesel blending mandate exception by 3 years. The House just has that in a different place. And then on the bottom of R40, section 61, you can see is House only. This has to do with a special session in 2010 dealing with the Southern Minnesota disaster recovery. The House would amend an appropriation to the Department of Agriculture then and say that the Department of Agriculture has authority to spend that money to pay for mental health counseling for farmers, not just in that specific affected area of southern Minnesota, but in any area that's declared a disaster by either FEMA or the USDA as of the date of enactment. So that's effective retroactively to the date of enactment of that disaster relief act. Section 62, section 72 on the Senate side, those are the same. Those deal with the effective date of a law passed by the legislature that allows on-farm burial of concrete and rebar without a pollution control permit. Those are the same. Bottom of R41 is House only language that provides authority to Steele and Wadena counties to include in their capital improvement plan bonding for their state fairground, their county fairground buildings. There's a limit, $650,000 for Steele County and $1 million for Wadena County. And then moving on to R42, there's Senate-only language requiring the NextGen Energy Board, as part of its report to the legislature in 2013, to take a look at next-generation biofuels. And then you see the balance transfer related to the new microloan program. That's Section 74 on the Senate side. The repealers are very similar. There are some small differences that, again, have to do with civil law jurisdiction within the House, as well as the Senate added a couple of additional sections to their repealer regarding the Board of Animal Health's duties concerning a rabies proclamation. And then, moving on to R43, you see the start of Article 2 for both bodies, the second and final article. And all of the provisions in this article have to do with the Department of Agriculture's food safety oversight and regulatory duties. These were changes, for the most part, also requested by the Department of Agriculture. The language is the same through about midway through R43. The bottom of R43 on the Senate side, Section 3, that's a provision, once again, that was removed for civil law, data practices reasons in the House. On R44.
Excuse me, Colby. Question here, comment from the Senate Research. Mr. Knopf.
Mr. Chair and Colby, I think the one that on Section 3, that actually, on the House side, you repealed that section, and the Senate modifies it. And the concern was that when the department brought this in, the concern was that they were removing some enforcement authority for the dairy program by repealing it. And so what the Senate did is, instead of repealing that section, decided to modify it to take out everything else but dairy, so that these enforcement powers. So you'll see that in the repealer, the House did have a repeal of this section.
Mr. Chair and members, thank you for that correction. That's correct. That is, this wasn't removed. See my note now. It wasn't removed due to civil law issues in the House. Mr. Knopf is correct. It was part of the department's repealer, and the Senate added it back in, took it out of the repealer, and modified it, as Mr. Knopf said.
Thanks, Mr. Knopf. Go ahead, Colby.
Thank you. Mr. Chair and members, on R44, you see House-only language. Sort of in general, and this shows up in your list of differences as well. The House and Senate took two different approaches to the treatment of commercial feed and whether commercial feed would be regulated under the new food safety statutes that the department recommended. So what you'll see then, some of the differences start on page R44. Essentially, the department had proposed aligning the definitions of adulterated and misbranded food and feed into this new Chapter 34A that you'll see later on both sides. And in the House changed or clarified that while the definitions in new 34A might apply to commercial feed, the civil penalty and other enforcement authorities do not. And the Senate drew a complete line between the two and said that that's why you don't see language on R44. The Senate left the commercial feed definitions as is and did not align them with the new centralized food safety definitions for food that are in both bills. I don't know if that's clear as mud, but that's kind of a quick description of the differences. So that's why you see that the House is amending Chapter 25, commercial feed, and the Senate is not. And that continues on to R45 and R46, where we pick up the same language as requested by the department. And a lot of these sections, as I mentioned, there are several definitions throughout the department's different chapters of law dealing with different types of food, different or similar definitions for adulterated, misbranded food, as you see. And the department, in both bills, as picked up by both bodies, is trying to synchronize those definitions, have them all in one spot, and have every chapter point to those same definitions. So that's what you see on the bottom of R46 and on to R47. On R47, there's a House-only provision, Section 10, and that deals with extending the expiration of the department's Food Safety and Defense Task Force. The rest of R47 are, again, synchronizing definitions with the new Chapter 34A. That continues on to R48 and R49, which are the same. R50 and R51 are the same, as are 52 and 53 and 54. And on the bottom of 55 is the same down through sections 26 on the House side and section 22 on the Senate side. You'll see a difference again with the treatment of commercial feed. The House says the definitions in this on line 46.30. The House language says the definitions in this section apply to chapters 25 and 32. Chapter 25 is commercial feed. The Senate does not have the definitions applying to chapter 25. As I noted before, the Senate bill would not touch the commercial feed definitions that exist right now. On R56, see again an example of the difference between the House and Senate bill. On the House side, line 47.14 talks about under the definition of labeling in the new food safety chapter, an invoice slip with which commercial feed is distributed. And again, you notice that in the notice that is not on the Senate side. The rest of R56 is the same. The definitions are the same on both sides. On R57, the top of that page is the same, but sections 28 and 24, again, the House has the department's language, which talks about human or animal health. The Senate removed references to animal health. On R58, the language is mostly the same, but again, the House language is talking about commercial feed as recommended by the department, and the Senate removed that language. And on the bottom, that's why you see on R58, the bottom of that page, the House-only language, again, dealing with commercial feed. On R59, then, that the House-only language continues through 50.18, and then after that, the definitions of misbranding, those are the same. Minor technical differences towards the bottom, but they're drafting differences only. On to R60. Again, there are some very minor drafting differences at the top of that page, nothing substantive. And then the language is the same through the rest of R60. And then, but the bottom of R60 actually on the House side is the Section 30. This is where I mentioned the House tried to state clearly that while the definitions in Chapter 34, food safety, as proposed in this bill, would apply to commercial feed, the enforcement provisions in this new chapter would not. So you see that on the bottom of, the top of R61. And again, you see that there's a difference in Section 31 of the House bill and Section 26 of the Senate. House line 52.28, that reads the end of that line reads the enforcement provisions in this chapter do not apply to violations of Chapters 25 and 32. And then there's Senate-only language towards the bottom of R61 dealing with civil actions. That was a civil law removal on the House side. And then on the bottom of R61, you see Subdivision 3, criminal actions on the House side, and Subdivision 5, criminal actions on the Senate side. Essentially, the House has the department's language, which says that, as I understand it, if the Department of Agriculture uncovers a food safety violation, they would report that to the county attorney to press charges. And the House language says that the county attorney or city attorney shall institute proceedings without delay. And the Senate side says that the county attorney or city attorney, when presented with that evidence, would consider instituting an appropriate proceeding. That's the difference between the two bills. Bottom of R61 is the same after that difference, as is the top of R62. There are what I perceive to be minor differences in Section 33 on the House side and Section 28 of the Senate side. Different ways to refer to the rules promulgated by the Department of Ag. On R63, then the rest of R62 is essentially the same. R63, there are minor drafting differences, again, that I won't point out unless members would like me to. There was a civil law change in the House side, once again, on the bottom of R63 to not talk about civil actions, to replace that with an administrative action, and not discuss the recovery of attorney's fees. So that's the end of R63. On R64, see the language is virtually the same. There's another minor civil law change on the House side. And then the big difference, obviously, is the civil penalties. The Senate has the department's requested civil penalty authority, and the House does not. On the rest of R64, Section 36 on the House side and 32 on the Senate, those are the same. And then we move to R65, almost done. There's a small difference, as you can see, line 59.30 on R65 on the Senate side, and 59.31, they don't have a counterpart in the House. Once again, a civil law change for the House. Moving on to R66, then, there's a comma difference. And other than that, the pages are exactly the same. The language on R66 is the same. On R67, Senate-only language, again, a civil law amendment in the House. And that continues on the top of R68, the Senate-only language that the House removed. And once again, on the bottom of R68, there's no counterpart to Senate language on 63.7 through 63.9, civil law once again. And then R69, the bottom of R68 and onto R69 are the repealers related to the food safety chapters. As Mr. Knapp mentioned before, and he may want to say more, the House picked up the department's requested repealers regarding butter grading and labeling, milk and cream testers, misdemeanors for dairy product violations. and the Senate did not, and I think that has to do with the catch the Senate made regarding not the fact that this Chapter 34A does not apply to dairy products, so the Senate removed those authorities to enforce that chapter from the repealer, so those would remain in law. And that, members, is the end of the side-by-side.
Thanks, Mr. Sullivan. Any questions from members of the conference committee on that side-by-side overview? Before we get started, anybody from the department here that could come down and give us a quick 10,000-foot overview of your thoughts on the overall bill before we get started? Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Greta Gothier. I'm with the Department of Agriculture. Thank you for this opportunity to give a 10,000-foot overview of the bill. First off, I'd like to express the Department of Agriculture's thanks to you, Mr. Chairman, to the Chairman of the House Ag Committee, Representative Hamilton, and Senator Magnus of the Senate Ag Committee. We appreciate everyone on the committee members and chair leadership and your conferees. Incredible dedication to agriculture in Minnesota, to forwarding agriculture as the primary goal of what we're all here for. And the commissioner wanted me to convey his thanks for that dedication and for the great working relationship that the department has shared with all the members of the committee over this session and this biennium. Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Fredrickson did send a letter dated April 17 to the members of the conference committee, so I won't belabor those points, but we think this is, with maybe a couple minor changes, this is a good bill. We know there were things on either side taken out in order to meet committee deadlines, and we appreciate the willingness to do that and make sure that this bill remained alive through the legislative process. In the letter from the commissioner, we detailed which of each side we felt should go back were just because of those committee deadline adjustments, which I'm sure you're all aware of. We appreciate, again, the great working relationship, and thank you for that, and we think this, with a couple minor changes, and those are laid out in the commissioner's letter, we do greatly appreciate this bill, and we think it'll allow our department to operate more efficiently and more effectively, and to do a better job for Minnesotans that we try to help and respond to improve and support agriculture in Minnesota.
Thanks, Ms. Gauthier. With that, let's get started. And I would like to work off of the spreadsheet that shows the differences between the two versions, House and Senate versions. And first off, at the top of the list is the provision on the Senate side for estate soil. Mr. Chairman, Senator Magnus, any comments on that?
I think, Mr. Chairman, I know Representative Szymanski, I don't believe, was here. He was lobbying for that on the House side and contacted me several times about it. The folks at the University of Minnesota, their soil department has been lobbying for this also strongly. And so us on the Senate side, this came about, I think, after your bill was through. Mm-hmm. And one of the late additions, and it's something that the Senate supports. I don't know if any other senators would like to move that provision, or
Mr. Chair,
Representative Rosen, or Senator Rosen. I'm sorry, I got to get used to that.
I'd like to move the R1 Senate only provision, please.
Senator Rosen moves the R1 position on the state soils. All in favor of the senator's position, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. Motion is carried. Thank you. Next on the list is the civil law data practices provision. Chairman Hamilton, any thoughts on that?
Yes. On the civil law side, I would accept or make the motion to accept the Senate language on that and maybe look towards Mr. Sullivan or others. I know there's a number of changes throughout the bill, so would be appropriate to make one motion to adopt all those, and if so, just to where we're totally clear on how that motion would be made.
Mr. Sullivan.
Mr. Chair and members, I think that would be appropriate to adopt all of the Senate language that includes the civil law provisions removed in the House in one motion. Mr. Knopp and I, on the third column, tried to capture all the page numbers where these differences appear, mm-hmm. and I tried to point them out in my overview as well. We could go through if members would feel more comfortable and point them out again, or I think members could potentially work from the page and line number list that we have in the comparison document and make a motion from there.
I think your summary was very adequate. Any feeling on going through each individually? Chairman Magnus.
Mr. Chairman, I think we agree with you. Mr. Sullivan did a good job going through it, and the department supports those provisions, and we would certainly support it also.
Mr. Chairman?
If Representative Hamilton wishes to move that, we'll.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I would move that we adopt the Senate language that deals with the civil law data practices provisions.
Motion by Hamilton, beginning on page R3, carrying through page R68 to adopt the Senate provision. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same side. Motion carried. Next, we have the commercial feed exemption. Who would care to comment on that one? Anybody? Representative Hamilton?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I know when we were having these discussions in the House, and then after it moved out of the House, the Senate took up the bill. I believe there were some ag-interested parties that did get up with the Senate after that, after they've had time to review it, and the Senate made some changes accordingly. And so unless anybody would like to weigh in if I'm wrong about that statement, but I would move the Senate language dealing with commercial feed exceptions. And if Mr. Sullivan would like to clarify that to make sure that we get it all encompassing, if you will.
Mr. Sullivan.
And Mr. Chair, members, that's on page R13. Actually, the Senate also has an item in their repealer on R43. Too, but that's Senate language on lines on page R13, lines 15.14 through 15.18, and then on R43 in the Senate's repealer, that the appropriate or corresponding repealer is on line 39.10.
Any questions? Motion by Hamilton then to accept the Senate language on R13 and R43. All those in favor, again say aye.
Aye. Aye.
And opposed? Motion carried.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Hamilton.
I would move to strike on the Senate side section 32 starting on R13, line 15.22, continuing on page R14, starting on line 15.25 through 15.27.
Any thoughts or comments on that? Mr. Knopf.
Mr. Chair, I mean, you could take a vote on whether to strike it, but you don't really, if no one moves it's not in.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Thanks, Chairman Hamilton, but I think we will just move on to that one.
Well, I just, all right, I just wanted to let everybody know my thoughts on that, and I believe they're duly noted, so I will remove that motion, and we will move on.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We could go all day on this provision, could we?
We could.
So thank you, Representative Hamilton.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll move on to the next provision, and that happens to be a provision that I have carried, the Dairy Research Authority. It was brought to us a couple of years ago. We had this bill last year, and it didn't make the final cut. The bill didn't move on. So it's back again this year. It's strongly supported by the dairy industry, and I would move to accept the House language beginning on page R16 to R20 of the Dairy Research Authority or Commission. Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is there a fiscal note on this?
No, there is no fiscal note.
So
no.
they're able to do this, Mr. Chair, without any appropriations? Are they using that from some other area? Or they're able to do this authority without any appropriations from outside?
That's correct, Senator, and clarification, Mr. Reinholz, could you clarify? Or Mr. Sullivan?
Bob can come up. Mr. Chairman, members, if you, the language in there, there is no appropriation in there. It is permissive and gives them the ability to set up some of this, but no, there is not.
It basically sets up a commission, a public-private partnership, to look at the feasibility of a facility such as this, and there is a sunset clause as well, that if in 5 years there's no progress made, this commission would sunset. So, any other questions on the dairy research?
Chairman
Magnus.
Mr. Chairman, we had the same language in the Senate bill. For the most part, we did hear it. We did put it on our bill, but again, as in the case to meet the deadline, it was required that we should take it out because of the language that created a task force or board, created a board, mm-hmm. but it required us to make an additional stop and miss the deadline. So. We did have it on the bill. We support the language, but with one change on page 19, line 19.26, we also included ranking members. I don't know if Mr. Sullivan has an amendment for us, but we included that in our Senate language, and it's been our practice that that we include the minority members whenever possible and things. So,
Mr. Sullivan.
Mr. Chair and members, that's correct. There's an A-29 amendment in your binders, and it makes the change that the Senate Chairman just discussed.
Mr. Chairman. Chairman Hamilton.
Mr. Chairman, I agree with that, and I would move the A-29 amendment.
The A-29 amendment has been moved. Any discussion? All those in favor of the 829 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion passed. Thank you. So again, I would renew my motion to accept the House language with the addition of the Senate amendment. Again, those in favor, say aye.
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 And opposed, same sign. Motion passed. Thank you. Next, we have the RFA provisions, including the microloan program. Who would care to address that? Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would so move the RFA provision on R21 through 26 and the rider on the R42. This is a program that is one of the priorities from the Department of Ag. It deals with a loan program that there's no extra dollars coming out of this. We're taking the agroforestry loan program that's in the rural finance revolving loan fund there, mm-hmm. and taking the agroforestry, putting it into the total renewal development fund. Or no, excuse me.
That's another subject.
That's another subject, exactly. And we're using those dollars, about $260,000, to have the protected class, which is the disabled women and minorities, be able to apply for loans up to $10,000. I believe it's for 6 years, and it's a very good program. We had testimony in Senator Magnus' committee. They were very excited about it. This is a growing class of agricultural farmers, these minority farmers or protected class, whatever you want to say. It's for specialty crops and specialty ag product or animal products. And it deals, I believe, with the I'm not even going to say because I can't remember and I don't have my notes with me. But it was very well received. It went through finance in the Senate, very well received. We are not taking any extra money. We're just using the money that was not utilized in the agroforestry fund and using it for this revolving loan fund going forward. And I believe it's a well use of the money.
Any further comments?
Mr. Chair, yeah.
Representative Wodzinski.
Yes, I also will, I carried this section in the House side. I think this would be a good provision to keep. To accept from the Senate. So
okay, very good. So you're okay with the Senate language?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thanks, Senator, and thanks, Representative. So with that, I would move to accept the Senate language on R21 through R26, also the rider on R42. All in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
And against, same sign. Motion carried. Thank you. Next up is the biodiesel exemptions. And here is where we have some differences in language. Who would care to open up the conversation? Representative Keel, your thoughts on that?
Yes. We have the differences, the 8 years, and I'm looking at the number here.
Also the number one difference, 2 to 3
yes,
years as well.
And then the extension on the number one for 3 years for our winter months, as opposed to, I believe, the 2 years. I would prefer to leave it at the 3 years, the extension for number one fuel. And
Mr. Chairman, what page are we on?
Where are we on? Page.
It's also on page
R36 and R37. And then the House language jumps up to R40. So the House position is to maintain the wintertime number one exemption for 3 years. The Senate position is 2 years. And the other major difference is that the House exemption for mining, lobby, or logging, and railroads and Coast Guard vessels is 8 years. On the Senate side, again, we have that 2 year exemption. I like the Senate provision in terms of having the studies done. I would like to go a little bit longer than the 2 years on the exemption as well. We're at 8 year at 2. I think 5 is a nice middle ground, but that's just my opinion. Comments on the Senate side. Senator Rosen.
thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is, of course, the biodiesel and the E20 extension are, I think, discussions that we're going to continue on. I believe not only do we have session in 10 minutes, but I've got a very important meeting at the governor's office.
Good luck.
Yeah, thank you. And I do chair the Energy Committee over in the Senate, and I would ask gracefully if we could continue this discussion on these two provisions at a time when we can really have a good, thorough
Mr. Chairman, I would echo Chairman Rosen's concerns. She's chair of the Energy Committee. Let's have a chance to sit down and visit about the E20 and the biodiesel things when she's here. Okay. She's not. She has to leave. That's no doubt about it. So I would appreciate and respect for her as chair of the Energy Committee. We wait on this.
That's Mr. Chairman.
If you would agree with that, Mr.
Chairman Hamilton.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I would second and third that as well.
Very good. So we'll table the biodiesel and the E20 extension, maybe get a couple other items done here before we all
sure.
have to leave.
Yeah.
Thank you much, Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yeah.
Let's step down to the seized animals provision, again, which is a Senate-only provision.
Mr.
Who would
Chairman.
Care to comment on that?
Mr. Chairman, I would move the Senate language on that. This is a bill that we did here on the House side. Representative Mullery was carrying this bill. It is a good bill, and I believe we should... You know, like I said, I go ahead, I feel comfortable, and I'll move the Senate language on that.
Okay. Motion made by Hamilton to accept the Senate language on R38, R39, and again the repealer on R42. Any questions or comments? If not, all in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
And against, motion passed. Then the 7-year limit on wind easements, the language to extend.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator, let's call on Senator Brown.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move the R40 provision for the 7-year limit on the wind easements.
So moved, Representative Hamilton.
Mr. Chairman, I would, I guess, second that. This was carried by Representative Vogel, and this is something that we support in the House as well, as far as the Ag Committee anyway. So, yes, okay. I'd move that as well.
Very good. Thanks, Senator. On the 7-year easement extension, the Senate language, all in favor say aye.
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 And opposed? Motion carried. Thank you. Next, we have the mental health counseling grant, which is a House provision. Senator Dames.
Mr. Chair, I do have a couple of questions on that, and maybe I'm just not that familiar with it. But first question would be, is this going to be an additional appropriation And the second question is that we're extending it, we're broadening the area that it covers, which I don't see as an issue. What I see as the issue is we're broadening the area that it covers, but we're doing it retroactive back to October of 2010. And I guess I don't understand why we're going retroactive back to 2010, what the purpose of that is. So then that brings the next question up, and is that would almost indicate to me that did we extend the boundaries we were supposed to be doing this service in and extend past those boundaries, and so now we're doing it retroactive to make it okay to pay it? Is that where this is at, or where are we coming from here? I don't know, and I just need some clarification here.
Yeah. Senator, I think the reason for that, we'll get clarification, but I think the reason for that is this was an appropriation from our special session in 2010, and we had to make sure this was not new money. So we had to backdate this to that date, but that's the reason for that backdating. But let's get clarification from Mr. Reinholz.
Mr. Chairman, members of the conference committee, yes, this, you're correct. It's a redirecting a previous appropriation from the special session 2010. There is an amendment that was prepared for this. I think the chairman has, I believe, but there is, with the amendment, there is no new appropriation. There is no effect to the fund balance. Need to be changed slightly just to meet the budget rules that are established in order for us to be able to be certain that that won't show up as an additional appropriation fund statement.
Right. Mr. Chairman. Representative Hamilton.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And to that point, Senator, we had similar concerns when we traveled through the Ways and Means Committee, and we wanted to make sure that everybody understood this was not a additional or new appropriation. The money was already in an account, and Lutheran Social Services, and we do have a testifier here as well if we need additional questions to be answered. But what they're wanting to do is take the remaining of those dollars. We didn't use all of them. And open it up to a larger geographical area to serve a larger share of greater Minnesota. And so that's the intent of this. So it's not a new appropriation technically. It's utilizing those same dollars that were initially allocated for this program. And like I said, we do have a testifier here in the event we need additional questions answered. And, Mr. Chairman, for the clarification, like Mr. Reinholz talked about, I would offer up the A28 amendment as well.
Do you all have a copy of the A28 amendment? I thought I was the only one that didn't have it. Okay, it's in the binders. Oh, we don't all have binders.
Mr. Chair,
Senator Dames,
I appreciate the explanation on that, and that clarifies the appropriation. I still have one question that hasn't been unanswered, and that is, has any of this money been spent outside the boundaries that we originally set up? That's then my other question that didn't get answered.
All right. Let's call up the Lutheran Social Service representative, and we can ask her that question. Question from Senator Dames was, has any of this money been spent outside the allotted areas so far? And identify yourself, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Susie Schatz, and I'm from Lutheran Social Service of Minnesota. And Senator Dames, to your question, no, we have not spent any of the dollars outside of the original appropriated 29 counties from the special session in 2010. That's why we're seeking to do this. There have been disasters in many areas since then, and we have had requests from families in those areas for assistance, and we've had to turn them down. So that is why it's retroactive. There's needs still exist in those areas where disasters have occurred since fall of 2010 special session.
And thank you for your testimony, and I don't have a problem with expanding it at all because I think it's no more than fair to do that. Mm-hmm. I just wanted clarification, so thank you.
Sure.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Chairman Magnus.
Mr. Chairman, I wonder if anyone's here from MMB, Office of Management and Budget. And Mr. Chairman, we're going to have to go. But if we could get someone to testify from MMB here, if anyone's here.
It doesn't appear.
Yeah, we have someone coming.
Okay.
Down.
Okay.
Because we're going to have concerns on the floor. I know we will.
Okay.
And because some of my members have asked me already about this, so I want to make certain we understand the financial.
Welcome, and please identify yourself.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Alicia Cowell. I'm an executive budget officer at MMB. Yes, this amendment follows our budget tracking rules. The expenditure forecast assumes an amount of savings from cancellations that are expected. And so this amendment, by reducing the original appropriation and then reallocating the appropriation for the expanded purpose, has a net zero impact on the fund balance.
Any further questions? So your long or short answer is this is not a new appropriation?
Exactly.
Okay. Senator Daines, any further questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My questions have been answered.
I believe we have to leave pretty quickly, but we do now have the A28 amendment. If you had a second or two to look it over, the motion has been made by Hamilton to accept the A28 amendment. Any thoughts or comments? If not, all those in favor,
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Magnus.
What's the amendment? What's the difference in the amendment to the current language then?
Representative Susinski or Mr. Reinholz, do you have the answer?
Mr. Chairman, the difference is that primarily in the line 1.8, 1.9, where it takes the $4 million and takes away 200,000 of it and brings that down to 3.8. That's where we make, as the EBO from Alicia, from MMB indicated, there's a reduction. There's the reduction. Then the 200,000 is the expenditure that was in the original version of the House on lines 110 through 116.
Okay. Being time is getting short. Were you done?
Chairman, it's really just primarily. It accomplishes the same thing as the original House language. This language technically meets the requirements of budget rules that we have agreed to.
The Senate has some additional thought to put into this, so we will not rush you. So we will break here for both of us to go back to session, and we will recess to the call of the chair, hopefully approximately about 1 o'clock this afternoon. But recess to the call of the chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Ag Policy Conference Committee back into session. And welcome back, everybody. Good to be here again. We left off, and we had a motion on the floor, and we need to attend to that. Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I will withdraw my motion at this point in time on the 828 amendment. I know there's a few questions yet that need to be answered, so at this moment I will withdraw my motion.
All in favor of that motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Passed. Let's move on down our list then, and we will take on the House provision language pertaining to the Steele and Wadena bonding proposal. Who would care to address that? Representative Swazinski? Care to comment? It's the Steele and Wadena County bonding.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Hamilton.
I can speak to that, okay. I believe. Sure. This was Representative Kath brought this forward on the House floor. We had a debate on this. This was asking for the authority to be able to bond. There was a couple fairs or fairgrounds that had storm damage, and they're wanting to repair that. And maybe Representative Eakin would be able to shed some light on that if I'm missing anything. And they just needed the authority to be able to bond to do those repairs to the fairgrounds, and that's why they came to us.
So no cost to the state, it would be allowing them to bond.
That is correct, Mr. Chair.
Any questions on that House language amendment?
Mr. Chair, I'd move to accept the House language on that.
Representative or Senator Magnus.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I did talk to Senator Perry for Steele County, and I did talk to Senator Engelbretson with Wadena, and they both indicated support for that. And so I would encourage support for Senator Dames' motion.
Motion by Senator Dames. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. And opposed? Motion passed. Thank you. Can we do some of these repealers?
Yeah.
Okay. We'll take on some of these repealers next, and I'm going to call on Colby to kind of walk us through those and exactly what to do. It's on page R42 of your side-by-side. Colby Sullivan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. On R42, the item that shows up on the issues table that everyone has before them under repealers, the Senate has two additional sections in their repealer. that have to do with the Board of Animal Health and a local rabies proclamation. If I may, I'd just ask Mr. Knopf if you would speak to the two sections that just appear in the Senate bill.
Mr. Knopf.
Mr. Chair and members, the additional two repealers here were brought to us by the Board of Animal Health. Apparently, they don't use these anymore. Ms. Gauthier is here. If you want, she could come up and speak to the reasons that they were asking for the repeal of these two provisions. We have some other Board of Animal Health provisions similar to the House, and these were two additional ones that they asked Senator Magnus to carry as part of the bill. And so that's what these are, and they were requested by the Board of Animal Health.
Is Dr. Hartman here?
You sure?
Yep.
Welcome, sir, and could you explain to us the reasoning for these two repealers? State your name, please, for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. My name is Bill Hartman. I'm the Executive Director of the Board of Animal Health. And indeed, we did recommend the repeal of these statutes. I've been at the board 24 years now, and we've never used them. What the statutes would do is allow either the Board of Animal Health or a Board of Health to make a proclamation for a city or a town so that if there was rampant rabies in dogs there, dogs couldn't be unleashed, and they would, or if they were unleashed, they'd have to be muzzled. Now, if I'm not sure why these statutes are there. They probably were there because there was a lot more difficulty with rabies at the time. Right now, we're not experiencing that. We haven't experienced it during the time I've been there, the 24 years. So we don't think we need the statutes. We're just trying to clean up Chapter 35, but we're open to if there's any discussion on it.
Okay. Thank you, Doctor.
Sure.
Any further discussion or questions on that portion of statute?
Mr. Chairman, I'll make the motion then to accept the Senate language as it deals with repealers.
Okay, R42, the motion by Chair Hamilton to accept the Senate language. All in favor? All right. Senator Skoy, sorry.
Well, Mr. Chair, I wonder if we might not want to have a little more review on this. This certainly isn't anything that would have to be done this year. We had a little confusion just recently as we talked about this, so I was wondering if we might not be better off taking the House language on the repealers. It's only those two provisions that are different and kind of in the odd place of speaking against our Senate language, but if the House wants to move there, provisions, I will be voting with them.
Mr. Chairman, I will withdraw my motion and leave it up to you.
Mr. Sullivan.
Just have a technical note on that. The House has one of the three sections in its repealer as well. It has 35.67. The Senate has that as well as 6.8 and 6.9, and the three work together as a whole. They refer to one another. So I think to put off the repealer for this year, actually, you'd want to remove 35.67 from the House repealer as well and then adopt that.
Is that your motion, Mr.
I would move that.
So we have one resolution that's withdrawn and a motion by Senator Skoy to not accept any of this language. Is that correct, Senator?
That would be my intent on this, is to not accept these repealers at this time. We need to have a further a committee time spent on this, I think.
Okay. Any further discussion?
So his motion, Mr. Chairman, would be to take the House language with that provision removed?
Minus
that. Is that your motion, Senator?
Minus that repealer that Mr. Sullivan was talking about.
So we would have no language then, correct? Right. Mr. Sullivan.
Yeah, Mr. Chair and members, just to clarify, that is what I had said the motion would be, but I don't know if the conference committee members are ready to adopt one repealer section or the other, because the Senate has some other different provisions within their repealer. This is a portion of the differences. It's a significant one that Mr. Knopf and I raised, but there are some others that are different.
Mr. Knopf.
Chair, Mr. Sullivan, those others, though, are encompassed within other sections in this comparison. And so we'll be dealing with those on a piecemeal basis. Otherwise, they're the same. How I see this motion is just to say, just to remove any reference to repealing 35.67, 35.68, and 35.69. That's what I would do at this point in time, not necessarily adopt repealers, but just make sure that you're removing those from any consideration in the repeal in the section.
So that's clarification on that motion by the senator. Any further discussion or comment from members of the audience? Ms. Gauthier, would you care to address the committee?
We want to keep it. Damn, it's warm in here.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Greta Gauthier, Department of Agriculture. As I understand it, Mr. Chairman, just removal of references to 35.67, 35.68, and 35.69 is fine with us.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you for that clarification. Are we all clear on the motion now by the senator to remove those three sections of repealer? All those in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
And opposed, same sign. Motion passed. Thank you. Again, we're still talking repealers and amendments. Mr. Sullivan, could you walk us through that one, too, on the enforcement authority for dairy?
Yes, Mr. Chair. The next item on the list is the enforcement authority for dairy. When I walked through the side-by-side this morning, that was the correction, actually, that Mr. Knopf spoke about. I think it's also my understanding that the department's proposed new Chapter 34A, food safety, does not apply to Chapter 32, dairy. So you'll see on page 43 of the side-by-side, Senate-only language, the House repeals that section, which may then eliminate the department's authority to enforce Chapter 32. So the Senate instead made a change and to Section 17.984 in Minnesota statutes to say that the commissioner still has enforcement for Chapter 32. I don't know if I've characterized that properly, but in my understanding, then the Senate seems position is better.
Mr. Knopf, any further?
No, Mr. Chair, I think Mr. Sullivan characterized it very well.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I would move we take the Senate position on that. I think we need to have the department be able to administer Chapter 32. So I would move the Senate position.
Motion by Chair Magnus to accept the Senate language in this particular section. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Against? Motion carried. Next, we go into commercial feed definitions and R43 through 46 and up to 60 through 61. And who would care to comment on this?
Mr. Chairman?
Chair Hamilton?
Mr. Sullivan or whatnot, did we not address all this with the earlier motion on the commercial feed side or not? No, we did not? Okay.
Mr. Sullivan.
Yeah.
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Hamilton, the conference committee earlier addressed the tonnage fee exemption for the certain portion of the commercial feed. So now this is actually a separate issue dealing with the definitions and the food safety and whether they apply to commercial feed or not.
Okay. And leaving commercial feed separately in its own chapter. Yes. And I believe the Senate language was more comfortable with the committee members. Would there be a motion to accept the Senate language on this particular section?
Mr. Chair, I'll move to accept the Senate language.
Thanks, Senator Bames. Motion to accept the Senate language on the commercial feed definitions. All in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Next, we have a House provision, a fairly small provision, on the extension of the Food Safety and Defense Task Force. Chair Hamilton, you want to discuss that for us? On R-47.
Mr. Sullivan, can you offer up clarification on that?
And Mr. Chair and Representative Hamilton, the House position that's from the department's recommendation, that's to extend the Food Safety and Defense Task Force for another 5 years, I believe. Mr. Knopf said this morning, or it's my understanding, that the Senate doesn't have that provision, not because the Senate was opposed to it, but because they didn't have an opportunity to get to GovOps and have that committee review this.
State Gov, yeah.
Okay.
That's correct, Mr. Chairman.
Thanks, Mr. Sullivan, and also Chair Magnus. So again, the House language reads that would extend to June 30th of 2017. Currently, it's to expire at June 30th of this year. So it's a five-year extension. It's the House language of the Food Safety Defense and Task Force. All in favor of the...
Mr. Chair, I'll move that provision.
Okay, thank you, Senator. All in favor of the Senator's motion to accept the House language, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Thank you. Now we have language on the criminal actions for the Commissioner of Ag as it pertains to reporting of violations. And again, Mr. Knopf or Mr. Sullivan, can you lead us through that one?
Mr. Chair. Sullivan. Thank you. Mr. Chair and Conference Committee members, this is on R61 towards the bottom. Criminal actions, subdivision 3 on the House side, subdivision 5 on the Senate. The House has the department's recommended language that says, essentially, if the department reports a purported food safety violation to the county attorney or a city attorney to institute an appropriate proceeding, that the House language says that the local unit of government shall institute appropriate proceedings without delay. On the Senate side, you'll see on 55.24 towards the end of that line, the Senate changed that to direct the local units of government to consider instituting an appropriate proceeding if the department alleges a food safety violation.
Thank you. Does the department care to comment on which language they would prefer? The old may or shall verbiage again. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Greta Gauthier, Department of Ag. Mr. Chairman and members of the conference committee, it's the opinion of the Department of Agriculture's Council that essentially the meaning is the same, so we have no preference.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
So that leaves us in a quandary. So we have the House language that says requiring action by the local law enforcement, and the Senate side saying it requests action. Representative Swedzinski.
Yes, I move to accept the Senate language.
A motion's been made to accept the Senate language that requests action by local law enforcement or county attorney. Any further discussion to that?
I would just say, Mr. Chairman,
Senator Magnus.
This is something that got quite a bit of discussion in the Judiciary Committee in the Senate, and these this is a language that came out of there. So they would appreciate Representative Swedzinski's motion.
Okay. Wise choice, Representative.
Thank you.
Say did you flip a coin or did you really?
I appreciate may rather shall on occasion.
Okay. So the motion is to accept the Senate language that says that they would request local proceedings. All in favor of that Swedzinski motion, say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign?
No.
Motion carried. Your name is hard to say when you get a dry mouth, let me tell you that.
We had ice cream, Mr. Chair, that could have helped with that.
Okay, we have one more repealer before we get back to the fun ones. A repealer of Article 2. And again, Mr. Sullivan, Health Facility.
Mr. Chair and members of the Conference Committee, on the repealer for the Food Safety Article 2, the House has five additional sections that were requested by the Department of Agriculture. They deal with authority to enforce butter labeling laws, milk and cream buyer and testing licenses, penalties for violations of Chapter 32, and my understanding then that the Senate doesn't have those provisions because they made the change to say the department still has existing authority in statute to enforce Chapter 32 dairy products separate from the new food safety chapter.
Mr. Knopf.
And Mr. Chair, that was actually an initiative I would talk to Senator Magnus about on the Senate side. I think it was a leftover when the department was working on this bill. At one point, dairy was included, and then it was removed. And as my understanding is, these sections should still exist. Like if you, especially the last one, you get rid of the general misdemeanor penalty for dairy law violations. It's my understanding that there would be no misdemeanor penalty for dairy violations without that. And I think it was just an error that they were kept in. And I talked to Senator Magnus about removing those provisions, that we shouldn't be affecting the dairy law in this, since the dairy law is not included in this new chapter except for the definitions.
Correct. So are we saying that we should leave them in?
Mr. Chair, yes.
Yeah. Okay. Is the department okay with that? Okay. So we will not act on the Article 2 repealer then. Thank you. Now we're back to, we have Chair Hamilton.
Did we do, Mr. Chairman, did we do the differences on page R34 between the electronic scale and electronic grain tickets? We address that?
No, we haven't done that yet, and the reason being, in talking with Mr. Sullivan over the noon break, there are several smaller pieces in the language that we all more or less agreed to.
Okay.
So there's a couple of word changes that we're going to have to do, so we thought we could do those all at the same time. Was that correct, Mr. Sullivan?
Mr. Chair, yes, that's what I had considered. I thought that would make sense to go through some of the smaller changes. Then after, this is the list of the big significant changes, okay. And there are some other smaller ones. But it might not be worth the conference committee's time to look at differences in phrasing. Here there's a term that's different, yeah. That might be worth considering, but otherwise there are lots of shalls. I mean, not shalls versus mays, but just minor changes that are technical in nature.
Mr. Knopf.
Mr. Chair, I would recommend on those minor ones that you just leave that to staff, if you don't mind, on some of those. I don't think you want to spend your time on commas and things like that.
Yeah. But we may want to change the wording in the scale ticket, correct? Yes. I think one side says scale ticket, one side says grain ticket. You want to make a motion, Representative Hamilton?
Mr. Chair, the reason I bring that up is I was stopped in the hall and talked mm-hmm. about that. So maybe someone from the department would just like to comment on that?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Chairman Hamilton, the department would prefer the word scale, which is part of the House language there on line 29.9, section 53, House language, line 29.9. At the very end where it says electronic scale, the Senate language says electronic grain. I did speak with the industry representative this morning, who indicated scale was the word that they would like, and spoke with our director of plant protection and also indicated scale is the language we would prefer.
Okay. Mr. Knopf, is that okay with that? Okay.
Mr. Chair, you may want to take a vote on that one, but I think we were just carrying the department's language. You must have changed this in the House at some point, because I don't think we changed it in the Senate to green.
Mr. Sullivan.
Mr. Chair and members, my recollection is that this was added to the department's language via an amendment, an oral amendment in the House Agriculture Committee.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we used the wording scale at that point, the author did, to match the terminology used throughout the rest of Subdivision 2.
Yep. Mr. Chair, that was my point. It was we just carried the department language, and you guys actually fixed it up.
Senator Skoy.
Sure. I'll move the House language using the terminology scale as opposed to weight ticket, grain ticket, or whatever it was.
All in favor of the senator's motion to use the House language in the word scale, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion passed. Okay, going back to some of the earlier ones that we left till we had more time to discuss them. Senator Skoy.
Thank you. Well, members, I have an amendment dealing with the E20 extension. It's lines R38, R39, or pages R38, 39, and 42. And the House doesn't have any language here, so we've kind of felt like we've been negotiating with ourselves on this, but I understand there is some consensus that has been developed around what we're going to do with the ethanol extension. I understand that we have to do a date extension or the it will expire on August 30th of 2013. So we do need to move forward on this. And with that, I would offer the A7 amendment to R38, R39, and R42. And so I don't know if that's passed out or what that is, but
I think we do all have copies.
Essentially, what that does is it gives a 3-year or a 2-year instead of a 1-year extension. We're moving. I lost my dates here.
It's R38 is where we're
up here. We're moving from the Senate was extending it from 2013 to 2014. We're extending that to 2015. And then the other 2012, we're extending to 2014 from 2013. And we're also going to ask that the Next Gen board put together a group of representatives from the industry to take a look at this and make recommendations to the legislature, because Minnesota's always been a leader in renewable fuels and biofuels, and we want to maintain that, and we want to make sure that if there are new emerging fuels that are out and about being produced in the state, that they can be sold in the state. So we've got the Next Gen board working on that and going to have some stakeholders get together and make some recommendations to us.
Thank you, Senator Scoy. Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Senator Scoy, for getting the parties together and finding and working on this as well. I understand that this is something that everybody can support, I believe. I know I visited with Representative Eakin as well, and so once again, thank you for bringing this forward.
Just a question I had. Would this be in addition to the working group, in addition to lines 36.9 to 36.16, that the biodiesel task force would meet separately then after getting a recommendation here?
Mr. Chair, this is a separate group.
Okay.
We thought that the expertise would be different on this group than with the biodiesel group, so we would be looking for a different group getting together.
Very good idea. Thank you for that. Anybody in the audience care to testify on the amendment, if you've seen it and have had a chance to look it over? And if there's no opposition, no testimony, we assume that there is no opposition to it. I see some head shaking. Senator Magnus.
Mr. Chairman, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Senator Scoy, for the amendment. Mr. Chairman, Chairman Hamilton and I and the stakeholders and a lot of folks around the table here have been working diligently on this. I really appreciate the stakeholders, the department, the governor's staff, all the work everyone's done on this to come to an agreement that is reasonable and respectful.
Yep.
And yet responsible to what's going on in the industry out here. And certainly we support the biofuel industry, ethanol and biofuels as much as we can, and I think this is a good step to take. And I really want to appreciate voice my appreciation to everyone that has worked on this. They've done very good. Thank you very much. So.
That's what makes ag so much fun to work with. The people who have the same goals and ideas and want to work together. So thank you. Any other questions from committee members? Senator Scoy.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I just want to make sure that you know, in addition to the A7 amendment, I'm moving R38, R39, and R42. Just want to be clear on the motion.
Okay. So the motion is to accept the Senate language as amended by the A7 amendment with those particular sections. Any further questions? If not, to all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passed.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator Dames.
I'd like to move to the biodiesel exceptions, R36, R37, and R40.
Okay.
I'd like to move to accept the Senate's language, and on page R37, line 3530, our language reads May 1st, 2014. Move that to May 1st of 2015. So we would be doing a 3-year extension.
Could you run that by us again? I didn't get my page flipped in time, Senator.
On page R37,
okay,
line 3530, Currently, we have in the language, moving it forward, the expiration date to May 1st of 2014. I'm asking to have the Senate language with that date move forward to 2015. So it'd be a three-year extension.
And would this apply to the number one fuel and the exemptions for those listed above, the railroads?
Yes.
Mining and off-road logging?
Yes.
Mr. Chair?
The entire section.
Representative Keel.
Mr. Chair, I understand that the differences in the exemptions is considerable. The Senate would like to see it be two or now three, and we have 8 years in there. And I know there's some real concerns amongst the mining industry, logging industry, the railroads, and I guess the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. And I understand that's a lot of time. I wonder if the Senate would consider a five-year exemption instead of an eight.
Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Keel, I'll make my speech because the House members haven't heard it. Many of the members in the audience and all the senators will have heard this before. And I'm a soybean farmer, so I'm a strong advocate for biodiesel in Minnesota. But we need to develop a fuel that works in cold weather. And we are a cold weather state, and there's nothing we can do about it. And the longer we push this off, the less pressure there is on the industry to fix the issues that there are. And the more exemptions that we give, and I have opposed every one of the exemptions that are in this language, the longer, the more exemptions we give, the less impact the mandate has. It's kind of death by a thousand pinpricks. And so we're gonna go along with the 3 years, but I don't think the Senate's willing to go beyond that. I know I'm not. Because I want the industry to fix this. I want biodiesel that works for all people in Minnesota. Because if you've ever laid underneath a truck in the wintertime and changed fuel filters, it's not any fun. And we're not going to give the trucking industry an exemption, I don't believe. So let's get them pushed forward and fix this. And we will have more legislative sessions in the next 3 years where if there's issues, we can work on it. But I think right now I'd not like to go beyond 3 years and let them keep working hard to fix the issues, if there are any, with biodiesel. And if they've got them fixed, then we'll be good to go in 3 years.
Representative Eakin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess I thought that 8 years was too long to begin with, and I was thinking of, 5 years would be better, but I think 3 years would be sufficient, and that it does give time. And if there are still problems, you can make an extension of the exemptions at that point. So I would support the Senate amendment if that comes to a vote here.
Mr. Chairman. Yeah. Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Senator Skoy, for being a champion on this issue. And I think all the Aggies are echoing what you say. I know Representative Keel works extremely hard, bring in all the different parties, the interested individual stakeholders in the same room, and worked extremely hard on this issue. We had the truckers, the miners, Representative Keel, you had the forestry,
railroads
school buses. And everybody.
Yes, and the school buses school joined buses. Eventually.
Yeah, exactly. She worked extremely, extremely hard leading this through the House and subsequently putting a bill together that we could get passed off the House. Working with the Iron Rangers and everybody, obviously. And so she did a fantastic job. And so I understand and I respect why she's such a strong advocate, not only speaking for agriculture, but speaking for everybody who had a vested interest in this. I don't want to speak for Representative Keel on this, but she also, I believe we talked about the study, the language there that we all support.
That's correct.
Mr. Chairman, I wonder if it would be okay if we could ask maybe the representatives from to come up and say a few words about the 3 years if we get someone who represents the mines, if the study language is in there.
Welcome to the committee, and identify yourself, please.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Craig Pagel. I'm the president of the Iron Mining Association of Minnesota. Appreciate all the hard work you've done on this over the years, and respect the work that's been done. And I understand the concerns, and I really appreciate Representative Keel's work with us to sit down and identify why we were asking for a longer period of time. I understand the study, and I think it's something that probably could be good to do. But as far as the mines, the reason we were looking at the 8 years that maybe the Senate isn't aware of is that we're at a point right now where the expansion of the mines are at a point where buying vehicles that have to last 8 years, actually beyond 8 years. By having a 2 or 3 year extension is helpful. I appreciate that. But 5 years will get us beyond a little bit more of that. Plus, we also know the EPA is coming down with either a Tier 3 or 4 requirement of vehicles we're going to have to purchase. And the senator is correct. It's not fun to crawl underneath a truck, but in these trucks loaded are 1,000 tons. And it's not as simple of changing the fuel filters on them to where if we can get a little more help on it. We're not going to change how the whole mining industry of the world builds their engines, and by the time the Tier 3 or 4, whatever we end up with, is required, we don't know what fuel they'll be running on. So I think the study would be good to identify some of that. But as we're making major purchases, $3 million apiece for these pieces of equipment, we're putting risk on that industry, and I would hope that the biodiesel industry would understand our concerns. We have no problem with the biodiesel. The problem is lots of times the blend of it and what we're receiving probably isn't up to standards. So it isn't just us simply trying to fix the problem. We need everybody's help. The study should do that. Thank you.
Senator Scoy.
Thank you. And hopefully the extension of the number one will give you some relief, Mr. Pagel. I'm here to tell you that if in 3 years we don't have biodiesel that will work in all the engines in Minnesota, I'll be carrying a bill to repeal the mandate.
Senator, I really appreciate that and your identification, the fact that you do live in northern Minnesota, that it is an awfully big state. I was told earlier this week that they were planting sugar beets and we were shoveling out a foot of snow. So it's a big, wonderful state, and we want all of us to work together on it. And thanks again for your help.
Question to
Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And question to the testifier. You know, you've heard the testimony around here, and like I said, Senator Scoy has been a champion on this issue, and he makes extremely valid points in all this. Representative Keel's worked extremely hard finding peace in the valley, if you will, on the House side as well. Hearing the testimony, hearing the comments, and understanding the study is coming forth as well, could you support a three-year extension to where we could come to terms on this and move this thing forward?
Chair, Mr. Representative, Pagel. Senators, it'd be a lot easier if it was 5 years, I have to admit, but we do need that extension. We have major problems with the fuel, and we need to work it out somehow. So I appreciate anything we can do at this point. I'm not the only one that's been working on this, however.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I just had a further question, Mr. Pagel. If you've had some trouble in the past, has that been with fuel that has not been bio?
No. I'm the chair, senators, representatives. I'm a little bit reluctant, but the fact is one of the mines actually had all their vehicles stop because they did get a load of B5.
And what time of the year was that?
I'm not sure when it was. That's a problem that we've experienced, and it's unfortunate. We don't want to have that happen.
No, nobody wants that.
No, I know.
No. Thank you for your testimony. Anybody else who would care to testify, please step forward. Welcome and identify yourselves, please.
Thank you. My name is John Appas. I'm with the law firm of Messerly and Kramer, and we represent the Minnesota Regional Railroads Association. Our problem, the small railroads problem, is kind of on the other end of the spectrum that Mr. Pagel just spoke to, and that is the engines that we use. There are some new engines that are being tested and coming online, granted. But the engines that are used in the railroads are typically, well, the little guys in particular, can be 30, 40, and 50 years old. And these are engines that are, we hope the fuel someday, Senator Scoey, works, but the engines are probably not going to change a whole lot because they've been the way they have been for 30 and 40 and 50 years. We run these engines after we buy them from the Class 1 railroads, and we haul all variety of agricultural commodity. And we have to fuel here in Minnesota. That's where the short lines run from, around the various different places. We don't fuel out of state. We can't get the stuff from out of state, or if we can get it from out of state, you know, you have to haul it in, adds cost, et cetera. These exemptions were in place when the law was put in place. Just a quick little bit of history. And when we made some changes a few years ago, there was the chairman who made the changes and took the exemptions and put a sunset in, said, well, if we don't have it all worked out 4 years from now, which was the extension that the sunset that he put in place, he said, we'll come back and we'll work it out and we'll put the exemptions back in. Well, he's not here anymore, and we're here discussing this whole issue all over again. The exemptions were put in place for a reason. We pled the case at that particular time. We would hope, Senator Scoey, that the fuel would improve, and we just use it because it could be used. But at this point, to say you need to use something that doesn't necessarily work doesn't make it happen. So we hope to extend the exemption to 5 years that's being discussed here at least, and we think that would help at least our small railroad industry a bit.
Thank you. Ma'am?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Amber Backus with the firm of Leonard Street and Dinard here on behalf of Canadian Pacific Railway. We appreciate the discussion about extending the exemption and appreciate that both the House and the Senate are interested in extending it. I guess our preference would be for the 5 years as well and 3 years. State statute says that the biodiesel content mandate could go up to be 20%, and we're a long ways away from having that working in our engines. At the same time, federal regulations will be coming online where the railroads will be required to purchase new, more environmentally friendly and reduced emission engines at that time, and we're not sure how biodiesel works in those new engines that will be coming online at that time. So at least with 5 years, we've got a couple years to see what level the mandate's going to be at in Minnesota and where the purchasing of those new engines is going to be and how that's working. So our preference would be for the 5 over the 3, and I appreciate your listening.
Thank you. Questions from the committee? Senator Scoey.
Thank you. Not a question, just a comment. You know, we have had a lot of talk and discussion about biodiesel, and I understand you guys' concern about it. From my perspective, I think that a large part of the problem that we had with our fuel in Minnesota was a result of the switch over to the ultra-low sulfur. It occurred at the same time that the biodiesel mandate came in place. Now, I don't know that for sure, but we're going to put this group together to take a run at figuring this out. And hopefully, and I don't have the date for when they're going to come back with their report. I was just trying
page to... Page 38, Senator Scoey.
15. Whenever they're going to come back with their report, I think all of us sitting here are going to, or I certainly am committed, if there's a problem, I'm going to work with you guys to fix it. And there's no guarantee that I'm going to be here. I know that. Elections occur, and elections have consequences. And maybe that chair chose not to run for re-election. I don't know exactly how all that worked out. But somebody here will be at this table. And, you know, we've got to have fuel that works in Minnesota. And so let's give this group some time to take a look at what we have and how it works. And then when we have that information, we'll move forward and address the issues that you guys, and valid issues that you guys are bringing forward today.
Thank you, Senator. Further comment?
Mr. Chair, Senator Scobie, we do appreciate that, and I guess if the study is going to be in there, I wonder if there's any consideration to include other agencies that work with our industries beyond just having it be the Department of Agriculture deciding this, but maybe Economic Development, Transportation, and DNR.
Mr. Chair, I think the Commissioner of Commerce is involved.
That was ultimately, excuse me.
I believe it's the Next Gen Energy Board, isn't that correct,
no,
Senator Magnus?
No.
Well, Mr. Chairman, just to point out,
sure.
I would ask the members, Mr. Chairman, to turn to page R38, and I want to point out a couple of things with the a few things about the report language. It's a Commissioner of Agriculture, Commissioner of Commerce, and the Biodiesel Task Force. But we're asking for two reports, and this is important, and it's important for the testifiers to hear this and the members. The 2013 report back to the legislature would outline the steps needed, what needs to be included in the tests. And then the second report in 2014 comes back with the recommendations to do this. And so with that, with those ideas in mind, you know, I think Senator Scoy's or Senator Dame's notion of moving it to 2015 then allows those reports to be done, allows them to be analyzed and worked on. And members, if it does include the language that we need to extend the exemption some years out, which it may, so be it. But if it includes language that says there's no reason to continue the exemptions, then that's the way it is, too. But at least we have some justification for doing them. And that was the point that we suggested when we insisted on this language in the bill, was to have good reports and have justification for either ending exemptions, continuing them, continuing some of them, or whatever it shakes out to be. So,
to that point,
Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Chair Magnus, as well, on those comments. And I think we all agree on the reports as well. Again, I don't want to speak for everybody, but agree on the studies and agree on the reports. It's just whether or not the other entities are comfortable if the reports, we know if it's a 2 years or 3 years, excuse me, and the reports come out and say they indeed need additional time, we add on to it, or do we accept the 5 years and if the reports come out and say no, you don't need the additional time, then we come back and lower that. And so it's, again, who do we make comfortable here? Do we make us that are big supporters of the biodiesel industry, does the comfort lie with us and maybe a little uneasiness with the other entities, or do we give the comfort to the other entities and then a little uneasy here on the supporters of biodiesel, if you will? And I think that's what we're debating. I think that at least the individuals that I spoke to, that represent the mines and the railroads and stuff like that, they're saying we want to do this, right? And we're wanting to get there as well. And I see a little nods of the head. And we just want to make sure that we don't run into some additional issues there. So I think everybody's trying to get to the same point. It's just, where does the comfort lie? And I think that's what Representative Keel worked extremely hard on, bringing folks together and working on the language there as well. And we recognize and support the Senate's language on the studies. We think that's fantastic, and we thank you for bringing that forward. And now it's just the number of years and where we're going to allow that comfort to lie.
And I just received some data from somebody today that the ASTM cold weather biostandards are in progress right now. They'll be released in the 6 to 8 months. Then they mentioned that there'll be a series of lab testing and then a full year during which they'll go through a cold weather season to see if these field tests actually are valid. So it looks like about 3 years to run that cycle of the ASTM testing, and then some lab tests for a season, and then cold weather testing in the real world for a year. So I think 3 years for the testing is about right in terms of how long that's going to take to fully understand and vet if we do have problems with ultra-low sulfur or aromatic blends of diesel fuel. But this is a big issue. It's important for the industries you mentioned, for farming, for trucking, for everybody that relies on diesel fuel. And my stance for coming on from the House side, going down from 8 years to 5 years, is a pretty good compromise. I'm not crazy to go too much lower. Representative Keel, do you have any comments?
Well, yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Scoy, I too am a soybean farmer, but I have to admit I've never been under a truck when it's 20 degrees changing oil. I leave that to my husband. Although I have been under a beet lifter digging out dirt, it's not much fun. But, you know, in retrospect to all of this, I really, when I look at all of this, I think that we need to support the industry as a grower, and I think that we can come to a good product that would be excellent for all, and if not, if that happens to be, and I make the same commitment that Senator Scoy does, that if I'm here, I certainly will work very hard on an exemption for those industries that it works, that it's difficult for. But maybe in the light of certainly the industry, but in an agreement here and conciliation, that maybe we should work toward the 3 years of with the exemptions, and also work on the study. I like the study very much. I appreciate the fact that we work hard on I think Senator Magnus and I talked about the fact that we not only have to have studies within an office, within a laboratory, but that we all also need to have those real-world studies that we know when it's, you know, 20 below outside blowing, that it actually doesn't freeze up and cause us trouble, or that it is the other issues that biodiesel can have. So I think it's a great product, and I think it will be great for our state. So I guess I'm willing to compromise on the three if that's satisfactory with the rest of the members.
Any other testimony? Welcome, sir.
Good afternoon. My name is Scott Hedrick. I'm Director of Corporate Affairs for Renewable Energy Group. We're the company that owns and operates a 30-million-gallon biodiesel plant in Albert Lea. For folks who might not be familiar with it was the old Soymore facility that we actually helped build years ago and acquired last year. I appreciate the work that's been done. I understand that you know, this is not only a technical issue, it's an emotional issue. Certainly from our industry's perspective, we think in terms of a compromise, 3 years is ideal. And if I could just for a second, I'll talk to that. I think it's important when you look at categories of users, we think about who they are, what they do, and where they're located, and we realize that not every user is the same. Certainly understand the surface mining and timber folks' concerns when you think about where they're located in the state, how they operate, how they handle their fuel. There's some real-world concerns there. And in terms of infrastructure, they don't have the same kind of infrastructure in place that other users of biodiesel do. And therefore, I think their concerns in terms of how cold weather would affect the handling and use of the material is appropriate. What I would say is that as an industry, 3 years ago, we were under about 500 million gallons nationwide. Last year, we produced as an industry over 1.1 billion gallons. We are on a development path to have 2 billion gallons of production probably within the next 3 to 4 years. As we grow in size and scope, the industries that support our industry grow in size and scope. If you ask industry folks, there was not a lot of work done on additives for biodiesel in the past. There has been today. I think that you'll see, and if I could, I'll talk about it in a second, with respect to the number one cold flow issues, a number of products that are coming on the marketplace that will address those. And we feel as an industry that data and those products will be available within 3 years, which is why that time frame seems like a rational compromise. When you look at railroads, I'd like to point out that today in Canada, there's a requirement nationwide to use B2 biodiesel. That does not exempt or waive any industry, including rail, so that product is in use today. I'd also like to point out in Illinois and in Texas, our industry is aware that most of the major class ones that service those states are using between a B5 and a B11 blend. The National Biodiesel Board published a meta study of 26 individual studies of railroad usage. That study is available online, that looked at engines anywhere from 30 years old to 2 years old, looked at engine wear, tear, usage, found no problems. And in fact, I think there's an irony here. As EPA requires increased emissions controls in railroad engines, railroads, especially the smaller ones, are going to have a couple options, either buy new equipment or find other ways to mitigate their emissions. The biodiesel study that I referenced that looked at older engines showed that the use of biodiesel at a B10 and B20 rate reduced those emissions on par and similar to if you had bought a new engine within the last 5 to 10 years. So not only does the product work, not only does it work today, not only does it work in a large variety of applications, it's going to work tomorrow. With respect to the number one issue in cold flow, real valid concerns there. Number one is chemically a little bit different than number two ULSD. That's why the Minnesota Biodiesel Task Force asked 2 years ago for work and study to be done. That's why the Minnesota Soybean Growers helped provide funds. That's why the National Biodiesel Board helped provide funds to start a study last year. In a perfect world, that study would be done. It's not. We certainly expect it to be done by the end of this year. I was told today by our folks, so take it with a grain of salt because I work for the biodiesel industry, that the validation round of all that testing is done. So where they are is basically collecting samples and then doing the work and actually doing the cold flow proving work this winter. So from a hard data standpoint, you know, we feel there's a lot of good data out there that shows it works today. With respect to some of the questions that were raised, we think that data is going to come back sooner than later. I'll join the chorus that says if that data doesn't come back sooner than later, then we have every reason as a biodiesel industry to come back here with the folks who've raised concerns, to sit down with them, and as they say, we either need a permanent exemption or a longer-term exemption to do that. But if you ask me today, am I confident that we're going to have data, answers, and solutions for folks within 3 years? I think we will. Am I confident that it's going to make my industry happy across the board? No. I think we're going to find out some things that we need to do from a manufacturing standpoint, from a production standpoint, that are going to be different if we want to be in the number one market. But the data is going to be the data, and we should let that kind of determine where we go in terms of how the product is used.
Thank you. Any comments or questions from members of the committee?
To the motion?
Well, to the testimony. Thank you.
Thank you.
I would just add, I too do not enjoy changing fuel filters. And 2 years ago, we had a late fall, a wet fall, a cold fall, and there was a lot of issues with filter plugging. And I would have to say that these past 2 years since then, we haven't had a real cold fall, I would also grant you, but the issues have totally decreased. And as tanks are cleaned up, whatever, we learned how to handle these things better. The number of problems has really gone down dramatically. So hopefully that indicates that the fuel is getting better and the standards are becoming higher, and it's just a better fuel. I think it is.
To that point.
Senator Schooley.
You know, Mr. Chair, the other thing I think is happening is, I know for our farm specifically, our bulk dealer is every other transport now. He puts additive in for us. And it's helped. I mean, we don't have near the problem that we used to have with the black stuff in the fuel filters. Yep. The black stuff in the fuel filters is because there's no sulfur in it to kill that bacteria, and so we're adding this additive. So we're learning how to work with it. It's getting better, and I agree with you. Our problems are being diminished, and yep, hopefully, you know, we're going to be able to utilize this as a good homegrown Midwest-produced fuel.
Mr. Chair, Just for clarification, I want to point out that my motion does also include Section 66, which is the reporting and the studies that are to be done. That's included in my motion.
Just for clarity.
Yeah. Thank you.
So run that by us one more time, Senator Dames. What does your motion include?
The motion would be to accept the Senate language on page 37, number 3530, that line extended to 2015, and also include section 66, which extends on page 37 through onto page 38 through line 3616.
Mr. Chairman,
Mr. Knopf,
we do have a technical issue. Right now on 35.31, on both sides, it says that this section is effective April 1, 2012. Would have been great if we had done this in March, and that would have worked. The key here is we have to get it before May 1st of this year, otherwise this would expire. And I think given the timeline that we're on right now, I think we could safely put in this section is effective the day following final enactment rather than putting a retroactive effective date in there, because that's at least 10 days away, and I'm assuming the governor only has three days unless you would have passed this on the last day of adjournment or something, the last 3 days before adjournment. I'm assuming, so we could probably do the day following final enactment would be better.
Can you handle that as a technical?
Well, Mr. Chair, I would just include that as part of the motion.
Okay.
I'll accept that, Mr. Chair.
Okay, Senator Dames accepts that as part of his motion.
3531. So the day of final enactment.
The day following final enactment.
35.31 enactment is the effective date the day after final enactment. Is what the full motion reads. This is a key provision. Any other comments by members of the committee?
To the amendment?
Yes.
To the amendment. I just once again want to thank Representative Keel for her hard work, I know, in the House and working with everybody else. And to the individuals in attendance and whatnot, you understand the commitment and dedication from Representative Keel as well. Listening to, we had, again, the farmers. She is a soybean grower. The farmers, the railroads, the truckers, the miners, the forestry, and everybody else. So I guess I probably shouldn't, but I am speaking for Representative Keel. She does have your best interests in mind. I hope you know and understand that. So thank you for your hard work. And like I said, being a soybean grower and everything else, to reach out to all the vested people with vested interest says a lot about you and your character. So thank you for that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
So will Senator Magnus.
Senator
Dames.
Senator
Dames. Did you have...
No, I have no more.
Okay.
Nope.
Okay, so we will vote. All those in favor of Senator Dames' motion on the biofuel, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign?
No.
Motion is approved. Well, my fellow chairman, we have one item left, don't we? We saved the best till last. I believe we had as we left off this morning, we were discussing the mental health counseling grant, and Representative Hamilton had a motion. Would you care to renew that motion?
What was that motion? That motion was lost my amendment.
An amendment, yes.
Yep. You got an amendment.
828.
It's the 828 amendment.
I will renew my motion to pass the 828 amendment. Can't find it, do you? Oh, here it is. Pass the 828 amendment. I don't know if there's any additional questions. I'd stand for questioning unless we want to bring the testifiers up again.
Yeah.
Senator Magnus.
Mr. Chairman, I would like to have the department come up and testify on this provision.
Welcome back.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Greta Gauthier, Department of Agriculture. speaking on, Mr. Chairman, the A28 amendment. Mr. Chairman and Chairman Magnus, Chairman Hamilton, the Department of Agriculture supports this provision in the House bill, and we support this amendment. It's our understanding that there are farm families out there who have sought mental health recovery assistance from Lutheran Social Services. The Commissioner of Agriculture did sign a contract with Lutheran Social Services in 2010, pertaining to the 2010 flood, I should say. We see this as a continuation to provide assistance in terms of mental health recovery to the farm families that are in need. And Mr. Chairman, just as a point of information for the question that I believe Senator Dames raised this morning as well, it's our understanding that sometimes the in a disaster recovery process, the mental health issues don't surface for 12 to 18 months after the actual incident because there's so many other more pressing needs. And then finally, the full impact of the disaster comes to rest after a period of months. So that's kind of a reason why we may still be seeing some of these from disasters that happened in calendar 2011 may still have some needs arising out there into the future. We just want to make sure that farmers in need get the help that they need, Mr. Chairman.
And it's your understanding that this is not new funding?
Mr. Chairman, it is our position that this is not new funding. From our standpoint, the contract with Lutheran Social Services, which the commissioner signed, I believe, in 2011, encumbered that money from our standpoint, Mr. Chairman. However, I do understand that Minnesota Management and Budget has an accounting rule that necessitates the language in this amendment here, and we're fine with that.
Question from Representative Eakin.
I just wanted to make a comment in favor of the motion or the amendment, representing an area that deals with flooding on almost annual basis. And many years we're facing this situation. I've seen firsthand the stress that a lot of people are under and the mental, mentally how that negatively affects people. And there is a real need for this funding. And since it's already been allocated for this purpose, it makes perfect sense that this should be made available to all people who are going through stressful situations like this throughout the state. So.
Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Ms. Gauthier. I just want to be sure I heard you right. The department is supportive of this provision.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Scoy, yes, the department supports this position.
Thank you.
Senator Magnus, any other
questions? I think, Mr. Chairman, and I worked with you and with Chairman Hamilton quite a bit about this. I appreciate your efforts working with this. The department's for it. The MMB has clarified this for us. That'll help us in our discussions with our folks. I don't have a problem with the motion. So,
Senator Dames.
Mr. Chair, I would just like to thank the testifiers for answering my questions this morning and this afternoon, clarifying it, and I, too, will support the amendment and support this portion of the bill.
Okay. So we have to act on the amendment, the A28 amendment from Representative Hamilton. All those in favor of adopting the A28 amendment, say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion passed. Now we have to add this to the...
Yes.
Representative Hamilton.
So, Mr. Chairman, I would move the House language. On page R40 through R41, beginning on lines 32.17.
Would be the amended
one. As amended.
Yes. So on your side-by-side, it would be R40 and R41. The main body at the top of R41 would be the new amended language with just that one minor change there. So all in favor of adopting the House language as amended, say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. Motion passed.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Magnus.
I think one more motion we need is to adopt the same and similar and have the staff work out the language for same and similar. You know, as we mentioned earlier, this word and that word might be a little different, but by making this a motion, then allows the staff to do that and take care of these technical things, and then we'll have it ready to go to the floors.
So all in, my motion. All in favor of the motion by Senator Magnus to clean up the language, the
same and similar
language, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion passed. Well, members, thank you very much. It was been a pleasure working with all of you.
We need to approve the bill. Approve the bill.
You need to approe the whole thing now.
No, you don't. So, Mr. Chairman, I would move we approve the conference report as amended. I think that's it.
Motion by Chairman Magnus to approve our conference report. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
And opposed? The motion is passed. Now I can say thank you to all the conference members, and thank you to you audience members, too, for helping us out today, getting through some issues that needed to have some more work and discussion. So thank you all very much.
Thank you, Paul.
And again, to Senator Magnus, capping off a great career here in St. Paul, we want to thank you so much.
Thank you. And I got a speech prepared. There's that country song out I've been singing, and it's called Adios and Vaya con Dios. That's what we're doing. Beat the sand. Yep. Thank you very much, everybody. Really appreciate it.
Again, thank you, everybody, and the meeting is adjourned.